My name is Lana, and I'm finally ready to talk about what happened to me in the summer of 2019. I had just turned 16 that March, and I was ecstatic. I could finally get my driver's license, and that was my first step to freedom. After my birthday had passed, the summer finally rolled around. In the summer, there were plenty of camps I could have attended. The one that I finally set my mind to was called UM Army, also known as United Methodist Camp. Basically, what you would do was you went for a week, Sunday through Saturday. And during that time, you worked all day building things, usually wheelchair ramps for the elderly or disabled. It was generally a fun experience until Wednesday rolled around. The day started out with the usual, waking up at 6 a.m. and eating breakfast with my teammates. At 11, all the teams, including mine, would head out and start on the wheelchair ramps. We usually were able to finish a ramp in about 2 days. So Wednesday was my team's second day working on this particular ramp. We finished up at around 3 in the afternoon. So my counselors and the rest of my team headed back to the church that we were staying at. I should probably clarify the living situation we had at this church for the next week. The boys stayed in a separate building, and the girls stayed in the basement of the church. I'm not sure about the boys' rooms, but the girls were put into a room down in the basement that was originally used as a Sunday school classroom. There were two pictures hanging on the wall, a picture of Mary and a picture of Jesus. That Wednesday night, we all laid down to go to sleep. There was a girl named Sydney who was laying down across the room, and she started saying things like, "We should tell scary stories." We all asked her to go to sleep, and then Sydney proceeded to knock on the wall behind her, saying, "What if we get a knock back from the other side of the wall?" The room was dead silent after that for about 5 minutes. We all figured that Sydney had passed out, so one by one, we all drifted off to sleep. I was laying on the opposite side of the room from Sydney, and I was facing the pictures of Mary and Jesus. After everyone had fallen asleep, I was still awake, just laying there in silence. Finally, my eyes became heavy, and I laid my head down on the blow-up mattress. Suddenly, I heard this tiny knock coming from the wall behind me. The knock was quiet enough for only me to hear, but just loud enough to snap me out of my tired state. I then looked at the pictures that faced me on the other side of the room and sat up in bed. What I saw will forever haunt me to this day. When I looked, I saw a tall, faceless figure leering down at me. The thing was so tall, it had to bend its extremely skinny neck to look at me with its featureless face. I was frozen in fear. I couldn't move or scream. The figure appeared to exhale and started to bend its neck towards me. After what felt like an eternity of laying there, watching this freakish thing move closer, a light flashed in the room from someone's phone, and it snapped me out of my trance. I abruptly jumped to my feet and dove into the bed of one of my friends. I stayed there with her for the rest of the night, with my head under the covers. I cried until I finally passed out from exhaustion. Thursday morning finally rolled around, and when I got up, I acted like everything was normal. I was terrified about what I saw, but if I said anything, everyone would have thought that I was going crazy or something, so I kept it to myself. My counselor kept asking me if I was okay. He told me later on that he caught me staring off into space with a sad expression and silently crying throughout the day, which I have no memory of. I really wish this was the end of the story, but to my dismay, it is not. Nothing happened for the rest of the day. However, when night came, the girls had gotten into a fight about something, and this resulted in them moving into different rooms. My best friend, Mulaney, and myself were the only ones left in the room with the pictures. I was absolutely terrified to go to sleep in that room again, now that it was just me and only one other person. As we were settling down for the night, my youth director, Rose, who was a close friend of ours, walked into the sleeping quarters and talked to us for a while. Suddenly, we all heard an ear-piercing scream echo throughout the basement. It came from one of the other rooms the girls had moved into. The three of us hurried into the hallway to see what was happening. The girls ran out of the room and were absolutely hysterical. One of them grabbed me and said, "He's here. The devil's here." I then made my way into the room that the girls had just fled, and I immediately felt a dark presence lurking there. The girls were finally able to tell us that something had grabbed one of them, and a moaning sound could be heard. I'm not sure if the girls actually saw something, but I put two and two together and concluded that there was something evil residing within that church, and that night it showed itself to me, for some unknown reason. When I was in my early 20s, I moved out of my parents' house with my brother. With a mutual friend, we rented our own two-story house. It was an older-style home, with very high ceilings and ornate decorative handrails and doorknobs. It wasn't until after we moved in that we learned that at one point the house was used as a funeral home, and out in the detached garage was where bodies used to be stored and prepared for display. I guess it made sense, since there was a small cemetery just behind the house, though most of the tombs were obscured by the tall grass. We were all big into those paranormal type ghost hunting shows, so on one of the first nights we were living there, we went outside and tried to capture EVP on our phones. We would ask questions and play back the recordings to see if we had caught anything. We were disappointed, but not surprised, when after about a half hour or so, we gave up, not uncovering anything even remotely creepy. But looking back, however, I think we succeeded in getting something's attention. It started slow. Our friend had chronic back problems, so instead of sleeping upstairs, he would sleep on the couch downstairs. Every so often he would tell us that he heard footsteps or muttering voices coming from the far side of the house. Specifically the voice of a woman, talking in a kind of happy sing-song voice, like she was talking playfully with a small child. After a while, all three of us would begin to feel very uncomfortable downstairs at night. We felt as though something was peering in at us from the darkness outside. We covered all the windows with sheets, and our friend wasn't too happy about sleeping on the ground floor on his own. But me and my brother were not willing to sleep downstairs, and he didn't want to have to suffer climbing the stairs twice a day. One night, we awoke to screaming coming from downstairs. We ran down to the living room to discover our friend, staring wide-eyed up at the ceiling, clutching his blanket like he was trying to tear it in two. He said that he had awoken to the sound of ragged, labored breathing coming from the corner of the room, and when he called out, something shifted in the darkness. We helped him climb up the stairs, and he spent the night on the second floor with us. I personally believe that I had the two most vivid, alarming experiences, even though I didn't tell my roommates about them at the time. There was this one time I was home alone, and I was cleaning up my bedroom and singing along to my tunes. It was broad daylight, and I didn't feel uneasy or nervous at all. Everything seemed normal. I turned around to grab something and exit my room when I froze. Something had just exited my room. I caught the glimpse of a tall figure with long dark hair walking out of the door and turning sideways to walk down the hall. Most of the memory is a blur, but one thing I do distinctly remember was seeing feathers hanging from the back of the figure's head among its hair. I shot out of my room and tore after the figure. I ran downstairs, but there was no one there. I was completely alone in the house. My second experience happened the day that we finally moved out. We had been living in the house for well over a year at this point. My brother and friend had since moved everything out, and I was alone sweeping in the kitchen area. From across the house, I heard a soft thud like a pile of towels had fallen over onto the floor. It made me pause, because I knew that there was practically nothing left in the house that could have been tipped over. I'm not sure why I decided to do it, but I began to speak aloud in the empty house around me.
"We're leaving the house now, so we won't be bothering you anymore. If you have anything to say to me, now's the time."
I waited a few seconds, but I got no response, so I tried again.
"If you can hear me, show me a sign."
I knocked hard on the counter 3 times. And almost immediately, from somewhere down in the basement, I heard 3 knocks mimicking my own in the same rhythm. I dropped the broom and power walked right out of the front door and waited on the front steps until my brother got back to pick me up. I told him that the cleaning was done and there was no reason to step foot in the house again. The one thing that I take away from this is that I'm never even going to pretend to mess with the supernatural ever again. So this happened over the course of a year, in the fall of 2005. I moved into Goldstein Hall for my freshman year of college. Goldstein Hall was your typical 3-story dormitory, built in the 60s, and had seen better days. My room was your typical cinder block dorm. It wasn't very fancy, but it was home for the year. I quickly threw myself into the college lifestyle. Classes, sports, parties, and living on pizza. Things were normal at first. My roommate Alex was a very shy kid who liked computers and watching football games. But he was homesick, and he spent a lot of time at home. So I would get the room to myself. One day while typing up a paper on my computer, I felt a chill go up my back as my TV suddenly turned on. I was creeped out, but I tried telling myself that I must have accidentally hit the remote button, even though I knew it was on my bed. There were times I would hear knocks at my window, but nobody would be there. Or I would have my door open and see it slam shut, as though it had been hit with a gust of wind. One day I came home to find my radio was on, even though I knew I had turned it off when I left for classes that day. I would see books being out of place, and there was this one time that my Phillies baseball cap, that I couldn't find for a week, suddenly appeared on top of my computer. Every once in a while, I would smell the strong smell of cologne in my room, despite the fact that I don't wear cologne, and Alex was almost never in the room. Each time something weird happened, I always tried to explain it away to myself, with less and less success. The weirdest incident of that semester happened when Alex and I were sitting in the dorm, watching Thursday night football. When out of nowhere, our microwave came on for about 5 seconds, and then stopped. Alex and I looked at each other for a moment, not saying a word. Then we went back to just watching the game. He wound up skipping his Friday morning classes and immediately went home the next day. The end of the semester came, and Alex decided that he was going to transfer out of the school. I wasn't too surprised, because I knew that he wasn't really into going here. After finals, I decided to be nice and help Alex load up his car. My family wasn't going to pick me up for winter break until the next day, so I had no problem with helping the guy move out. We had just finished packing up Alex's car in the parking lot, and we started to say our goodbyes, when Alex suddenly looked at me with a serious expression on his face. He then said, "I don't know how you can stand being in that room. You know what I'm talking about." I then let out a deep breath. "Yeah, I know. I'll be fine." We then shook hands, and I watched Alex leave Goldstein Hall for the last time. Luckily, nothing weird happened that night, and over winter break, I managed to convince myself that I was just having an overactive imagination. The new semester started in mid-January of 2006, and I was excited for my new roommate. This time it was a guy named Matthew, who was redshirting for the football team. Matthew was pretty nice, although I didn't have a lot in common with him. Matthew stayed for about the first week of classes,
and then immediately switched to another dorm. He didn't even say a word to me about it. I came home from classes one day, and all of his stuff was gone. When Matthew left, all the strange stuff that had been going on in the previous semester started up again. I was willing to deal with the weirdness of the room, because I liked having a double room to myself, for the price of a single room. As a means to cope, I started drinking more. Hey, I was 19 at the time. I learned to ignore it when a weird chill went around the room, or when my favorite sweater would be on my bed instead of in my closet where I had left it, or when I would fall asleep in my bunk bed and hear rustling on the bunk above me, even though it should have been empty. Denial is a beautiful thing. The year eventually started to wind down, and in early April, I wound up getting really drunk at a lacrosse party, and we're talking really drunk, like just short of being hospital drunk. My friends Mason and Ryan walked me home that night, and I remember them helping me get into my bed and placing a trash can right next to it just in case I got sick. I then fell into a deep, drunken sleep. Suddenly I felt water splash across my face. A guy that I didn't recognize stood over me, holding a water bottle. From what I could make out in the dark, he was a short, stocky guy with blonde hair and brown eyes. He yelled at me that there was a fire and that I needed to get out of the building. Confused as to how he got into my room and still being pretty drunk, I somehow managed to grab my phone and stumble out of the building with the fire alarm blaring and the sprinklers going off. The guy was right behind me until I lost him in the crowd of residents and RAs who were standing in the parking lot in front of the building, waiting for the fire trucks to arrive. It turned out that some genius in his drunken state tried to set off firecrackers in the common area on the second floor, which started the fire. We were allowed to move back in 2 weeks later, after all the water damage was repaired. When I got back, nothing happened in that dorm for the last 2 weeks. I tried looking for the guy that had woken me up in the dorm, but I couldn't find him anywhere. And eventually the year was over, and I left that dorm for good. Fast forward to about Halloween weekend, 2006. I moved back home and switched to commuting to school because, frankly, I had had enough of the dorm life experience. I made friends with a kid in my drama class named John. John was your typical theater nerd, and we got along pretty well. That Saturday afternoon, we were working together in the library for a test. Given that it was Halloween weekend, John and I started talking about our weird experiences. That's when I mentioned that I had been subjected to weird occurrences at Goldstein Hall. John looked at me dead in the eye and said, "You know that's where a kid died back in the 80s, right? My uncle who went here at the time told me about it." John went on to tell me that in April of 1986, a group of guys who were in a frat decided to set off a smoke bomb inside the common area on the second floor of Goldstein Hall. It started a fire that quickly got out of control, and a student died. He was found in his dorm on the first floor, apparently dying of smoke inhalation while trying to escape. Naturally, the story spooked me, and feeling immensely curious, I asked John if he wanted to look up the yearbook archives that were in the library. He agreed, and we were able to find the 1986 yearbook. I thumbed through the yearbook, and then froze when I found what I knew I was going to find. There was a memorial page to the fire victim, Kevin W. Anderson, born August 15th, 1967, and died April 6th, 1986. The smiling photo of Kevin looked exactly like the guy who had woken me up in my dorm the night of the fire.
There's always a reason to be afraid.